Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 260 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Knowing We returns this week to review the Singapore Grand Prix. Of course, as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime. It's Jamie183. How are we doing, sir?
Doing well. Good weekend. I went to an indie rock concert on Friday, which I'm sure you know a lot about, Matt.
I assume that means Indianapolis?
Great. Yes, I went to Indiana for a concert. No.
It's the kind of thing that you would do on this podcast based on how much you travel.
Not to Indiana. I'm okay. I travel on the cheap.
Sorry, you've never been to America?
I have, but only on special occasions. Not for one night only. But there we go. Good weekend. Solid race. Well, was it a solid race? We'll get into it.
Yeah, I'm sure we certainly will. I basically spent 12 hours on Saturday. Visual viewers, in my sim rig, doing the wettest race ever on iRacing, which was rather scary. But that's a story for another day. Obviously, we did a bit of a preview show for Singapore just before the weekend. That actually went live, I believe, after FP1 and FP2, and there wasn't too much to talk about from free practice. You know, kind of that typical thing, wasn't it? You know, you have a Liam Lawson crash.
George Russell crash as well.
George Russell also binned it. But it's kind of, again, isn't it? Especially during Friday. I don't know about you, Jamie, but I think especially with a lot of people that work and things like that, I don't tend to watch too much free practice, especially Friday practice. Just because, you know, you've got other things going on. But of course, obviously, if the podcast was getting enough views and numbers, and Jamie and I were doing this full time, then I'm sure we would watch all of free practice if it was.
If
the
you
only
paid
thing
me, I would watch. I would watch FP1. Yes.
There we go. But yeah, let's just get straight into qualifying then, Jamie. Because for the third weekend in a row, it looked like McLaren were not the fastest car,
which was a bit bizarre because this track last year they were great, especially Lando Norris, and. Like, you can kind of square off Monza and Baku as quite one-off circuits, but obviously high straight-line speed and low downforce, stop-start corners, or low-speed corners is what they're technically called. And, yeah, it felt like Singapore was going to be McLaren's return to form. And, in fact, it felt like they probably should have been, based on some stuff in practice, but quali pace for them just wasn't really there. And it looked more like a Mercedes versus Max Verstappen.
Well, really, George Russell versus Max Verstappen.
Well,
sensibly. Yes. I mean, it's just, again, it's kind of one of those ones, isn't it? I mean, Singapore has always done this, though, hasn't it? Ever since it came onto the calendar, it refuses to allow the dominant team. You know, look at, like, Red Bull 2023, arguably one of, if not the most dominant Formula One car of all time, could not get anywhere near the podium to save their lives. Obviously,
I mean, it would have done. If Verstappen got horrendously unlucky in the race with the timing of safety cars, I think he could have
still
got
weren't
going to
win. They still weren't going to
win, though.
You know, Mercedes, obviously, throughout their dominant era of the sport, obviously, I know they won in 2014.
And 16, because Rosberg's the GOAT.
And 16 as well, because obviously they kind of figured out that what Singapore was doing to the car, which is always quite funny. The fact that it took them 3 years to kind of figure out what on earth was going on. But yeah, this place just always, no matter what layout we're running or anything else, pretty much always refuses to allow the dominant car of the year to operate well. It's really, really strange, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's not that unusual a circuit, really. Obviously, a lot of the tracks these days are street tracks. A lot of them are night races. It is just very hot, which is probably the most unique thing, and humid. But yeah, it is strange that it just doesn't conform at all.
No, I think it's honestly a combination of, in a weird way, it's because Monaco is so narrow, it feels like you're always on full attack at Monaco, so it kind of praises the drivers that are able to obviously get right up to the limit. You know, you're out in Senna's. Obviously, back in the day, you know, more recently. I mean, it doesn't really feel like we've had a dominant driver in the 21st century at Monaco, does it? It's really, really odd.
Danny Ric is probably the Monaco specialist.
Well, I was going to say, Danny Ric, Mark Webber, probably a two. good examples in kind of the last 20 years or so. I mean, even then, Charles Leclerc, you could argue, obviously, how many poles he's had here as well. But but I think what I was going to say, of course, is Monaco always felt like it was one of those circuits where you had to put everything on the line to maximise it. Singapore, even when it was on its tightest, you know, kind of first original layout, back in the late 2000s into the early 20s, well, really all the way through most of the 2010s, wasn't it? Apart from the removal of the sling. Even then, it was never really a track where, you know, you had to push to the absolute limit because it was kind of a lot of... I mean, it's 90-degree corners, isn't it? Which Monaco really has... arguably not, but probably really, I guess, the final corner at Casino Square. But even then, they're both over adverse camber and things like that. Monaco's just a really odd track.
The final corner isn't Casino Square, by the way. But...
sorry?
The final corner's called Raskas. I thought you liked
it. I know, the final corner's not even called Raskas. Final corner's called Anthony Noakes, sir.
Anthony Noakes. There you go. It's definitely not called Casino Square.
No, I said the final corner and Casino Square. Are the only two, like, 90-degree turns.
There you go.
It's really, really odd, isn't it?
It is. But that left quite an interesting cornering session, especially as someone still believing in the Max Verstappen World Championship, slightly. I was getting quite excited in quali.
Yeah, and as someone that is hoping that Max Verstappen doesn't win his fifth World Championship this year, I was hoping that George Russell was going to be able to make the difference. I mean, Q1, obviously coming off of the Baku, I think we were kind of all hoping that it would be a fairly calm qualifying. I think we were all hoping it was going to take 6 hours with 14 red flags and that kind of thing. Q1, the only real kind of big talking point was obviously Gasly had a just catastrophic car failure, which apparently it was an electronics failure, which kind of really was a throwback, wasn't it? Because it felt like in the early hybrid era, we kind of had a lot of these things where cars would struggle to work out where they were on the track. There's a lot of interference around the venue. And it wouldn't surprise me if Alpine was still running Renault Tech from 2014.
Well, like, they very well could be. They've only got 6 races left as a engine manufacturer. So maybe, yeah, they've known they're on the way up for 3 years. They probably haven't changed it.
No, well, they won't be. Obviously, apart from trying to do reliability stuff, they haven't been allowed to change it too much.
No.
But yeah, I mean, out in Q1, then obviously, yeah, Pierre Gasly after that car failure right at the end of the session. Gabriel Bortoleto, first time in 8 races that he's been outqualified by Nico Hülkenberg, which is rather impressive.
It was all because Bortoleto slowed down for yellow flags and Hülkenberg. Exactly. But we move.
Lance Stroll, I mean, it's a track that requires skill. Of course, he's going to go out in Q1. Franco Colapinto, again, obviously. I mean, Ocon made me chuckle on the comms, literally as he was coming around to finish his lap. They were saying, oh, Esteban Ocon said it was the best Friday he's had all year, and he's out in Q1. And apart from Gasly, he's the slowest car out there. That's good going, isn't it?
Yeah, at least Colapinto didn't rip his car in half this year, so slight improvement.
Did Colapinto do that here last year?
Or was that Vegas? One of the Vegas. Night race street tracks. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Stroll ripped his car in half here a couple of years ago, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because then he didn't even race. Q2, though, again, I mean, if Q1 wasn't too dramatic, Q2, I would argue, was even less so. Hülkenberg so nearly made his first Q3 of the year after he probably shouldn't have made it out of Q1. Albon and Sainz, who then were both subsequently disqualified. Liam Lawson, who, to be honest, it was impressive, even got out in qualifying after he completely wrote his car off in Q3. And then Yuki Tsunoda back to Red Bull's second driver form, because no matter how many times it happens, people don't seem to understand that Baku is a real Verstappen tough circuit that always seems to suit the Red Bull second driver.
Yeah, for whatever reason, whoever you stick in that second Red Bull, they're going to do all right at Baku, it feels like, compared to Max.
It exposes the Red Bull's weaknesses the absolute least, which I think kind of counterintuitively means Max can't get more out of it.
Well, Max is relatively less far ahead of his teammate, effectively, isn't it? So
exactly. I mean, last year he was behind Perez pretty much all day.
Yeah, until Perez put it in the wall. Yeah, Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda. We hyped up this battle to stay on the grid on Friday. And then both of them were out in 14th and 15th, which wasn't the best showing from them.
No, in the V-card, though, it's kind of a little bit more, you know, Hadjar. Well, I mean, it's that weird thing, isn't it, with Hadjar, that it's not even a surprise that he just makes Q3 every week. He's just always kind of, obviously not guaranteed, but always pretty much there, isn't he? Which is just staggering. Exactly. But by the time we got into Q3, though, it was kind of everybody was still not quite revealing their full hand yet, was it? Especially, obviously, between Max and George. But George would go about a quarter of a second quicker on the first run. And then would... I mean, I think he only improved by, like, 8 thousandths of a second, but improved again on the second run. But easily the biggest talking point from the end of qualifying, Jamie, wasn't it, was... What on earth was Max Verstappen crying about Lando Norris by the end of that session? That was hilarious.
I mean, it was funny. He did... I don't know. I feel for Max because it's the most attacking, like, lap of the whole weekend in terms of the final run Q3.
Yep.
He's got the McLaren in front of him, which he can see down to
which, like, 6 seconds ahead, though.
But by the time he was going through the corner, it wasn't that because the McLaren was lifting off a lot.
He's not creating any turbulence or anything.
I mean, the turbulent air lasts about 5 seconds. We all know that, especially at a
track. Yeah, no, and that was about the gap Lando was ahead still.
Yeah, but it can't have been helpful. I do think Max overreacted slightly.
Slightly? Because... Completely? He'd already Lando locked Norris. Up once. And when Lando was nowhere near him at that point.
No, yeah. And I feel like... Yeah. To be fair, I don't think he would have got pole, regardless.
No, Mercedes... Like I said, he'd already made a mistake.
And the... what am I trying to say? Oh, the first lap from Russell was phenomenal, to be fair. Like, where you drop in almost 0.3 on the rest of the field on your first banker run in Q3, effectively. That's a massive gap to make up. So, yeah, even without the McLaren giving a bit of distraction and turbulence through to find a few corners, I don't think Verstappen would have beaten Russell.
No.
But I mean, that it gives Verstappen more reason to beef, so why not?
Well, this was the only thing I did think. I was like, is it a bit of psychology? You know, Lando now won't risk a move on Sunday because he knows Max is already upset with him. I mean, it came off to me as a bit of Max knew he'd already messed up the run. Obviously, this is his one that always gets away, isn't it, Singapore?
Never got a pole here. Yeah.
Never had a pole here. Has led less laps here than Antonio Giovinazzi, which, spoiler alert, is a stat that we'll be able to keep for yet another year. Antonio Giovinazzi led 4 laps, I believe, in the 2019 race. Max has only led 3 in his entire F1 career, which is just hilarious. But yeah, this is just the circuit that every year kind of gets away from him. I wonder if there was a little bit of kind of, I'm going to blame anyone but myself, because that is kind of what Max Verstappen does. I mean, Lando Norris does it as well. A bit of a Freudian slip there. But yeah, he just was kind of there going like, yeah, I think he was looking for an excuse to blame anybody else he could, wasn't he?
Yes.
When he'd already, like, he was already down in Sector 2, if I remember correctly.
It was down by not much. It was like a tenth and a half, 2/10.
But he was down 2/10 on his own lap, is the important bit.
Yeah, exactly.
He was. He was about 4/10 behind George already. He wasn't going to get him.
I don't think he was that far behind. But anyway, the thing is, though, it was a little rude from Norris to not pull over. But
generally, what else do you think Lando Norris could have done there? He's like 5-6 seconds ahead of him.
I guess, yeah. It's one of those things. If you reverse the situation, there is not a chance Verstappen is getting out of the way.
No, exactly. So, and he's probably... And to be fair to Lando Norris, I would say he probably also wouldn't blame Max in that scenario.
Well, Norris
I won't give Norris much credit. Well, yeah, Norris had already claimed that Max's privilege as a child helped him win 4 championships.
Yeah, because Norris had such a hard upbringing.
I was going to say, let me just double check this. What is Adam Norris's net worth?
Oh, it'll be a lot more now, won't it?
Worth $200 million. Nice. Jos Verstappen net worth.
Probably similar, to be honest.
Let's have a look.
Yeah, and it is. Yeah, it's a strange one for Norris because.
Well,
you're
Max is worth about
Verstappen.
$150 million, so I think Jos is worth a lot less.
So Max is worth less than Adam Norris?
Yeah, but Adam Norris has run a lot of very successful businesses.
Fair play.
That's not a surprise in, like, business terms to me.
No, but 4-time world champion of Formula 1, I feel like he'd probably be worth a bit more than that, but never mind. Norris is not exactly been in the slums growing up, has he?
No. Well, you say he was that meme. Our good friend Kane Centers was out. I don't know if you saw that after Saturday.
I did.
Max was obviously Lando Norris. If his dad had been Jos Verstappen, he'd still be at that petrol station.
Yeah,
which was hilarious.
Yeah. But that was the end of Saturday. Left George Russell to take pole position. Max Verstappen had to settle for second. Oscar Piastri third. Antonelli split the McLarens. And Norris was in fifth, which, to say he's meant to be coming back in the championship, not a great performance from him on Saturday.
Well, he was too busy blocking Max Verstappen, wasn't he?
Well, exactly. If he hadn't been blocking Max, maybe he'd have gone a bit quicker. Charles Leclerc behind Lewis Hamilton, actually, for sixth and seventh. Ferrari just weren't on it at all, which is amusing again.
It's just Ferrari, isn't it, at this point? They're just always sixth and seventh, it feels like. Or worse.
Yeah, but somehow still in the fight for second in the championship in the constructors.
Yeah.
Hadjar, Behrmann, and Fernando Alonso running out the top 10. And that left us on to the race day.
It certainly did.
Almost. Williams had to get disqualified, as he said, between then and the race.
Exactly, yeah. For the rear wing opening too much. So, yeah, a bit disappointing for them. Especially, obviously, after Carlos Sainz had, you know, been on his return. Obviously, after Baku last time out.
Telling us how great he is.
Exactly, yeah. He's the driver that's adapted the best to his new team, despite the fact prior to the last weekend he was like 18th in the, or 19th in the championship. All this, that, and the other. And there was a bit of potential drama, though, as we went to the Grand Prix, wasn't there, Jamie? Because about an hour before the Grand Prix, it did start raining in Singapore. It then stopped, and because it's so humid, it made no difference whatsoever.
It dried immediately.
Kind of I'm pretty certain it dries before it hits the ground.
Pretty much. It just becomes air, like water vapour in the air, because that's what the rest of Singapore is. It did lead to a very interesting F1 Academy race with a great move from...
I didn't see the Sunday race. I want to go back and watch that.
I think it was Maya Verg. Maybe I'm wrong, but
she's somebody on one of the Formula One Academy. I'm not joking when I say this year is on a Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton style trajectory in the championship.
With Verg and
Pin. Actually, Matt Verg, Pin, and I believe Pulling as well is still
Pulling's not racing
there
this year.
Oh, sorry, not Pulling. Ella Lloyd. Sorry, not Pulling.
Ella Lloyd.
Yeah. Is standings wise, I believe, yeah, they've only got Vegas to go. Oh, Ella Lloyd is quite far out of it, actually. But Maya Verg is now 9 points behind Dorian Pan.
Interesting. And Pan is yet to win it because Harry Pulling stole it last year. So,
yeah. Well, I think stole it is a bit unfair. I think just everybody expected Dorian Pan to win
before
and just didn't.
Yeah. But go watch the highlights back if you haven't.
I will be.
So it rained, but it made no difference. Everyone was on dries. There was a little bit of jeopardy on the formation lap, on the laps of the grid, but that was it. But Max chose to go on softs just in case the track was a bit slippery.
I think it was more he wanted to try and get the lead into turn one, just because he wanted to finally lead more laps here than Antonio Giovinazzi.
I'm sure that's entirely what motivated him and not the thought of a fifth world championship. He just wants to beat Antonio's laps.
I'm sure Antonio Giovinazzi lives rent-free in his head for that one statistic that he's got over him. But whether he wanted to get P1 down into turn one or not, it made no difference because George Russell, absolute rocket ship launch, didn't he? Controlled the lead down into turn one, was car lengths ahead of Oscar and Max, and we never saw him again. Spoiler alert, he just dominated, didn't he, really? Absolute controlled drive.
And Max did him a massive favour, just training up the McLarens, especially Lando Norris, for the whole race. I do wonder if Verstappen wasn't there, would Norris have been able to catch? I think he probably would have at least caught. Whether
I think he would have caught him. I don't think he would have got round him, though. I think George just had it. I think, again, of course, obviously, he just was controlling it. I think if he needed to be 20 seconds further up the road, he probably could have been by the checkered flag.
It did feel like the Mercedes was probably the fastest car.
It's a really good car, isn't it? Because obviously Singapore, in theory, the one thing everybody said the Mercedes is good at this year is cold. Singapore wasn't. I think what it actually is the Mercedes is very good at quick changes of direction at lower speed, which is obviously Montreal and Singapore.
Yeah. And to be fair, George has been doing a good job all season, but did an especially good job at Singapore, especially with, I'm sure, every lap going into the old Singapore sling, he was like, do not hit that wall on the right.
Give that an extra wide width. We're kind of immediately, though, Jamie, avoiding the elephant in the room, the high stakes moment of the weekend.
The big talking point, really.
What do we make of this between Lando Norris, technically Max Verstappen, despite the fact he probably didn't even know what happened, and Oscar Piastri down through those first couple of corners?
What do we make of it? I think it was rude from Lando Norris, as in, if you haven't seen the race, why are you watching this first? But anyway, Lando's going down the inside. Well, he's gone down the outside of Charles Leclerc, of Kimi Antonelli, sorry, straight away. And then he's just about got himself alongside his teammate into turn
because Oscar's
three.
Been not shoveled out wide, but obviously he's on a wider line because he was alongside Max.
Yeah, so Norris, because of the trajectory of turn three, the inside line is a lot shorter than the outside line. He gets himself fully alongside, at which point he clips the back of Max Verstappen's Red Bull, and that gives him an armload of oversteer, and that just like basically means he punts into his teammate and almost Sergio Perez's Esteban Ocon him into the wall back in 2018, I want to say. 19?
2018, yeah.
Yeah, and Piastri's...
I don't believe Ocon was driving horrendous. In 19, was he?
No, he wasn't. So it must have been 18 then, yeah. But it was very aggressive from Norris. It was extremely aggressive. But when you're starting fifth and your championship rivals third... In a way, I don't blame him. It's almost the first time we've seen any kind of nerve from Norris to do that kind of thing.
I fully don't believe he intended to do it.
Well,
I think he was trying to look down the inside of Oscar, but I certainly don't believe that's how he planned on trying to do any of that.
In a way, yeah. I do feel like, say Piastri's on pole and Russell's in third, for instance, I feel like he doesn't go for such an aggressive move on George Russell than he would on Oscar Piastri. Yeah, and given the context of the season where they've been playing so nice and they've just been like tiptoeing around each other basically the whole time, especially more recently with the Monza situation where Piastri was a little bit soft in giving that position back to Norris. This was a bit of a turn up for the books in terms of, yeah, it feels like papaya rules, especially now they've won the constructors, spoilers, they might just not stop them crashing into each other now.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where I think had papaya rules not been a thing all year and kind of so discussed about, it would probably be... I mean, it was still rude by Lando. He just kind of got a bit too hot in the knee. I think, honestly, he was in that car going, I've got a good start. I'm going to dive bomb everyone. And it just went straight into the back of Max and hits Oscar out of the way. I mean, Oscar did do a good... If you watch it from his onboard, he did a good job to keep it out of the wall, to be honest. Yeah. And then was lucky to hang on ahead of Leclerc. Off of the corner as well. I think had papaya rules not been a big thing throughout the course of this year as well, it would have probably been, you know, a bit rude, but a bit of a non-issue as well, kind of similar to Hamilton, Rosberg, Kota 2015, kind
Japan
of currently inside. Hey?
Or every race at the back end of 15 where Hamilton did the same thing.
Hey, hang on a minute, you let him win the last few races afterwards.
Well, he just stopped trying, but I mean, Japan, he shoved him off, lost him five places.
Championship was won, mate, doesn't matter. but anyway, I know we discussed this as well prior to recording this. The bizarre thing is, isn't it, and I don't know whether you still fully agree with me, is it feels like McLaren still want Lando to win the championship somewhat.
Certainly the executives at McLaren...
It feels like there's a higher up power that would rather, you know, whether that's... Because, I mean, we discussed this yesterday after the race, isn't it? Formula One fans, I would say, for the most part, like Oscar more than Lando. And Lando is kind of, he's not hated by a lot of people or anything like that, I don't think. But he's not particularly... I think a lot of people that liked him early on have kind of got a bit bored of, you know, he kind of, I think for a bit too long, tried to be the new kid on the block, tried to be the fun kind of child character on the grid. And then subsequently since then has been a bit too quick to blame everybody else but himself and has a bit of a moan and does all this, that and the other. So I feel like more fans like Oscar because he is just there to race. But you can't get the sense that, say, a Google, who obviously pumped a huge amount of money into McLaren in recent years, for whatever reason, might still believe that Lando is kind of like the more popular one. And he might be more well-known, but I think Oscar, to Formula One fans, he's probably more popular now.
Yes, definitely. I think I'd agree with that. And Lando is more of a marketing tool in terms of it. If you choose one of them to win the championship, I think yes, because the global audience doesn't know anything about personalities really. And Norris has simply been around longer. He speaks in the media more, and he's British versus Australian, which I think is more worldwide by nature almost. So yeah, I think certainly it feels like Zach Brown wants Norris to win. It feels like some sort of executive team wants Norris to win. I don't think they've changed anything because of that. So for instance, the slow pit stop in Monza, had that been reversed, I still think they'd have swapped them round. But it just feels like...
But would Lando have said no, being that many points behind already?
Well, he gave his second win away. I guess it wasn't a championship fight in 2024.
Exactly,
but
yeah.
I don't know. It's all hypotheticals, but I get what you mean. Norris doesn't help himself in the F1 world because people listen to him saying, I'm as good as Max, but hey, he's got a richer dad, which isn't true at all. Especially the back end of last year where he was basically talking as if he's one of the best drivers on the grid, equal to Max Verstappen. And then as soon as you get to a talent race in Brazil, he gets absolutely shown up. So I think I don't dislike either of them really.
Yeah.
I would rather Piastri win, but it's like 60-40. I don't really care.
I think that the big one as well, still isn't it, is always that comment he made back in 2020 that I hope haunts him for the rest of his days of, oh, Hamilton's only got to beat one other car. It's just such a bad quote to make, isn't it? Because then when you're put in that scenario, if ever anything happens, that comes back to bite you.
Exactly. And the thing is, Norris, especially early days, I feel like he was just so unserious and joking the entire time.
And that was funny to begin with, and then very quickly got a bit boring, didn't it?
When you put it in quotes on a headline, suddenly it's no longer a sarcastic joke, and you've just said that Hamilton only needs to beat one car.
But it wasn't a sarcastic joke, though. That was the thing. That was what made it so bad, was it wasn't. He meant that. And it was, again, a couple of years. I can't remember which race it was. It might have been last year or the year before, when he was in the podium room with Lewis. And Lewis actually said to him, oh, your car looks so quick today. Well, you had a dominant car for years.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just complimenting his old team. why do you have to take that to heart?
Yeah, I think that was... it was last year, it must have been, because it was a race win for Norris, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He started winning last year. I can't remember which race it was now. But, yeah. Maybe
might
it was
have been
Hungary.
Singapore or something. No, I think it was... Wasn't Singapore, was it? Because Hamilton got podium.
Did Lewis get a podium at... Did he get a podium at Hungary? I think he did.
Honestly, maybe? I can't remember. Off the top of my head.
But yeah, back to the incident that we were talking about. I feel for Piastri because it, from his point of view, it was very rude. It was like a slap in the face move from Norris.
Yeah, it was Hungary, sorry.
And given that they get the drivers to swap over because of a slow pit stop a couple of races ago, but they don't get them to swap over when one of them barges the other one off the track. Yeah, I can see why he was annoyed. But... I also think you're battling for a world championship. It's not primary school, is it?
No. And I think we will now... I'm kind of hoping to see a bit of a shift in these last six races of... Constructors is wrapped up now. As long as they... I know we spoke about this before, but as long as they don't actually let Max get into the fight seriously... elbows out. Start saying no.
10 points on Piastri in Monza, 25 points in Baku, 6 points here. It could happen.
Yeah, you still want to believe?
If he wins the next race. Basically,
you
up until
you
the
said
point
that last week.
Up until the point where he loses to Piastri in a race, at that point I'll
when
stop
the, when believing. The, when the momentum goes the other way, you mean just one weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing was obviously, wasn't it? We all said, the McLaren will come back stronger this weekend. Hasn't. Sensibly, we're heading back to some more traditional circuits. I think Vegas is obviously going to be a real outlier, but again, I don't think that track's going to suit Red Bull either particularly. Although they did do well at Monza, didn't they? Exactly. We just don't know, do we? I think at the end
you
of
never
the day,
know.
Let's get back on
the season.
Exactly. Let's get back into the actual race, though, Jamie, because obviously we've got a bit of time over the next couple of weeks to obviously talk about all the hypotheticals and the bigger picture. Not really a lot happened, did it? Most of the rest of the afternoon. Russell absolutely walked away. Max pit first, obviously, because he was on the soft tyres against everybody else in the medium. Really made no difference. There was a bit of beef between Lando and Oscar over the radio, wasn't it? Obviously, Oscar wasn't happy about the start. McLaren asked Lando if they could pit Oscar first. He said no. That, again, didn't really change anything. There were a couple of good overtakes, though. Ollie Bearman, a huge dive bomb on Alex Albon. That was fantastic, down in towards the final chicane. Isaac Hadjar as well, again, ran into engine problems, but was able to hold up Fernando Alonso for quite a while, after Fernando Alonso once again proved himself to be the world's most miserable man. and then had a slow pit stop alongside Oscar Piastri again.
And then told his team to shut up. That was great.
Basically, yeah, just said, if you keep giving me lap updates, I am turning off the radio. Hulkenberg would have a bit of a bottle job on that 45, just caught out by Franco Colapinto being
not a bottle job
menace.
Because he had nothing to bottle, thank you.
But he did, he had the position he was in. He was like 14th at that point.
14, yeah, great.
Still bottled it. Yeah. Still locked the race.
It wasn't the greatest strategy.
He's literally disappeared since Silverstone, hasn't he? He got that one podium and he's just gone.
He partied a bit too hard, I think, after that. But Singapore was a decent race. He outqualified his teammate. He was running 11th first in, and they just let themselves get undercut by half the grid, which is actually the opposite of what Sauber have generally done this season. So that was a shame. But yeah, he got caught up by Colapinto. Going very slowly. That shouldn't really be a surprise at this point.
No, exactly. I mean, we did then have a little bit of intrigue, didn't we, towards the end, with obviously the front runners trying to obviously get through some of the slower cars, because weirdly now, obviously, we don't actually see that much lapping in Formula One anymore. It's not uncommon for every single car to finish, you know, kind of within a minute of each other, which around every circuit
apart from the Alpines.
Well, Franco Colapinto.
I feel like that might not be a true stat. I feel like we still get a lot of lapping. They're just never in a big train like they were on Sunday.
Well, it happens around the shorter tracks, which obviously Singapore still technically is. But I think it was Shanghai, wasn't it? Where I want to say there was no like real safety car intervention or anything like that, but both Sao was binned at lap one. And I think they still were only about 1:10 off the win in the end.
Yeah, something like that.
Which is quite good going. Antonelli would then try and do his best Ollie Bearman impression with a great dive bomb on Charles Leclerc late on. And then Ferrari being Ferrari on a weekend where they're absolutely nowhere. Lewis's brakes would just fail with two laps to go. So he basically turned the track into the biggest circle he could. And that made Fernando Alonso even less happy.
Yeah, and Fernando Alonso was extremely mad the whole time. Despite kind of never really being in doubt that he would finish best of the rest. Especially when Isaac Hadjar started having issues. So he was just fuming for like no reason at all. But I guess, you're going to, when you're 43 and you got a bad back and you're really hot and sweaty in the car, you're probably going to be a bit annoyed. So fair play.
Exactly. I mean, he did get a Hamilton in the end, because I don't know if you've seen Hamilton's onboard. Obviously, he did basically just turn the track into no
a straight
track
line.
But on the other hand, Fernando Alonso was like, oh, you know, he did this, he did that, it's got to be at least a disqualification, that and the other, grr, I'm angry about 2007 still. Also, the funniest bit about that is when you watch Hamilton's onboard, everybody knows full well if Alonso did the same thing, he would absolutely say to the students, well, there was nothing I could do, I was trying to get to the finish.
Do you remember?
He would do exactly the same thing.
His last race of 2018, when he first retired, he was
11th
place
behind
Kevin Magnussen.
He just started cutting chicanes, didn't he?
He just started driving straight on at Abu Dhabi because he wanted to finish in the points and then ended up getting a big penalty. But everyone was like, oh, it's Alonso, he's so crafty.
Exactly, yeah. He's the wily old fox, isn't he? But he hates it when anybody else does it.
But Lewis did get a penalty, dropped into 8th, which is amusing. But yeah. That was
just
the end
bring
of the race.
On 2026, man, honestly. Bring on 2026,
well,
please.
So he can lose to Leclerc again.
Probably. But yeah, Russell, though, I mean, dominant win when all is said and done. Didn't really look back, did he? Like I said, the fact we only really saw him on lap 1 and lap 62 says everything you need to know. Verstappen, pretty good drive to hold off Lando Norris. Norris only really got one chance to have a go at him, and it's a difficult track to follow on anyway. And let's be fair, Norris is never going to try and overtake Max anyway because he's scared of him. Piastri in a very lonely P4 in the end, although he did close in on second and third towards the end of the race, but it was kind of never going to happen. Antonelli, dare I say a decent drive? I think it's all well and good looking at, you know, Russell dominating Antonelli down in P5 is not great, but what did spend a lot of time stuck behind Leclerc. I don't think he would have finished better than fifth, but I think he would have been a lot closer to the top four.
Well, he qualified fourth, didn't he? He might have been able to stay there.
He had a bit of a bad start. Yeah. Leclerc obviously sick, ahead of Alonso, Hamilton obviously after his penalty, Behrman, and then Carlos Sainz from the back of the field to P10 in the end. Actually very good going.
Yeah, he just turned up in the points at the end, didn't he? Without seeing any overtakes. He basically stopped late and then just appeared in 10th place.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. Do you want your quiz? Because obviously...
Let's do the quiz.
It's a minute long, so we should have time. I am again running late for work, so there we go.
still got another 5 minutes.
McLaren, obviously, won the Constructors' World Championship. Yep. If you haven't seen Oscar Piastri pull the plug on Zak Brown...
Oh, that's hilarious, yeah.
It was phenomenal. And just shows that he's a bit fuming. Anyway, that is obviously... Is it McLaren's 10th Constructors' Championship?
Close to...
Well, anyway, I think it's their 10th. That's what they said on the TV. There are 11 drivers, full-time drivers, who have contributed to a McLaren World Championship, Constructors' Championship.
Yeah.
You've got a minute to name all of them. Go.
Lando, Oscar, Coulthard, Hakkinen, Senna, Prost, Berger.
Doing well.
Trying to think.
You've got 45 seconds. You got four left.
I don't think Hunt was there because I'm trying to think 74. With John Watson?
No.
No. It's like mid 80s, isn't it?
There's one mid 80s and there's one mid 70s.
Yeah, it's mid 70s as well. I can't remember who was there in 74. It's not, it wasn't Lauda because obviously that was a bit later on.
It was Lauda, but that wasn't 74.
That was 84, wasn't it? Sorry, yeah, exactly. Alongside Prost.
15 seconds.
Am I just trying to get the 74s now?
Yes.
It's not like René Arnoux or someone, is it? Bizarre. Nope. No, don't think he drove for McLaren. Yeah, no, I knew it was going to be 74 that would catch me out.
One of them was the champion.
I don't even remember. Was it Fittipaldi?
Yeah, it was Fittipaldi. You're out of time.
Oh, I'm having that.
Okay, Fittipaldi. The other two, which is weird, because this is what, before the show, I was like, that's really weird. I didn't know that. In the 70s, teams ran three drivers. How do I not know that?
They could do that, yeah. They didn't have to, because I'm pretty certain it was only the top two scored.
Well, three of them were full-time drivers for McLaren. Emerson Fittipaldi, Denny Holm.
I
don't know. And Mike Hailwood.
Ah, fair enough.
Which I don't think you would ever got Mike Hailwood, but the rest of them you could have got.
Yeah, I think I'm happy I got the ones I did there, ultimately.
There you go. But McLaren celebrating their Constructors' Championship while Oscar Piastri was in the media pen, which is a bit sad, but I understand he was absolutely fuming.
Yeah, exactly. I hope he went straight back to Australia for a week.
Like the Rubens Barrichello interview where he's like, I just want to go back to Brazil and never come back.
My point was there is Australia's so far away from every other race at the end of the year, it's probably the only time it makes sense. Because then he can fly around the back to COTA. Yeah,
there we go.
I worry that momentum is shifting towards Lando rather unfairly.
22 points. You never know. It could be. I do think we're in for a good end to the season, regardless.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. Race rating, Jimmy. It wasn't that good, was it? Really?
No.
It was all right. I'm going to give it a 4.5. Oh, there we go. Oh, perfect. Look at that.
We're so in sync.
We know wheel. I don't think either of us want to do... Oh, we'll do Driver of the Day first, because I don't think either of us want to do the predictions recap.
Alonso deserves a shout, but it's obviously George Russell.
I think it's George Russell. I think Sainz deserves a shout as well. Behrman, again, getting points. Pretty good effort there.
Yeah.
Made me chuckle the fact that, like, Verstappen at one point was second on Driver of the Day, and I was kind of there going, what's he done? Just watched George Russell drive away?
No, but the Red Bull was not the second fastest car. And he finished second place. So
was
good.
It not?
The McLaren was absolutely quicker, and the Mercedes too. So
fair enough. But yeah, George Russell, driver of the day, pretty comfortable there. And predictions recap then, Jamie. What are the scores on the doors?
The scores. I'm quite far ahead because I can't remember what race it was, but one of them went really well. So it's 55 points to me, 43 to you.
12-point deficit. But there are a lot of points available.
There are, and it meant you went first. Yes, and you said Lando Norris would get pole position.
Damn
P5. Lando Norris would win the race.
Damn.
Got a podium.
I got a point.
Oscar Piastri, second place. Didn't get a podium.
No.
And Max Verstappen, third.
So I got two points.
Two points. 2 points.
Yeah, which, I mean, Lando Norris' whole prediction from, and he ended up fifth, is one of the worst predictions we've ever seen. I can't think of anybody that would have predicted.
Until it was my turn.
Exactly, yeah. And then Jamie showed up.
I said Charles Leclerc would get pole, which, after Friday practice, I was feeling quite good about that.
You should never feel confident in Ferrari after Friday practice. If they run well in Friday practice, that's the sign they're going to be terrible.
It's a kiss of death, isn't it, really?
Exactly.
So Charles Leclerc on pole, which didn't happen. Oscar Piastri to win the race, which didn't happen.
Where did Charles Leclerc qualify, sorry?
Seventh. Norris, wasn't he?
He was behind Hamilton.
Oh, well, imagine losing to Lewis Hamilton when you're Charles Leclerc. Oscar Piastri didn't win the race, didn't even get on the podium, so that's no points. Lando Norris, second place for me. I got a point for that because he came third.
Yep.
And Charles Leclerc on the podium, which he was very far away from.
He never even looked close.
So I got 1 point, and you got 2 points. So we're really proving the title correct, aren't we?
Oh, but I mean, I need to close in now at a rate of 2 points a weekend, I believe, and then I'll win.
It's 11 points. So yeah, something
six
like that.
Six races. Yeah. There you go. Perfect. Perfect. I'm going to do it by the end of the year. glorious. Glorious. Jamie, have we got anything else to add?
No, I need to go to work.
No, that's absolutely fine. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure to leave a like. Get yourselves subscribed. We might do another podcast, obviously, pre-COTA. We might do a bit of a news roundup. Hopefully there'll be something that comes out. Otherwise, we can just talk about McLaren or something like that. But yeah, I'm going to let Jamie go. I'm going to let you guys go. Thank you all, as always. And we'll be back very soon with more Knowing Wheel.